Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive myths which are associated with religion, most all of them, politics, no matter the persuasion, patriotism, which has become a form of dumbing people down where they no longer think, and the media, which is more a source of distortion and lies than anything else these days. We will also expose military and economic schemes as well as intelligence gathering schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to think so that we come to understand what is actually happening and so that we reveal who's telling the truth and who's not. Then during our second hour, speaking of truth, we're going to engage God on His terms. We're going to use evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion is 877-300-7645. It is toll free. Most of you are aware that the United States got caught with its hand in the cookie jar. It not only had begun a program of confiscating information by court order, secret court order, from virtually every American web powerhouse, from Apple to Microsoft, from Facebook to Google, Skype, you name it, Paltalk. They wanted it all. And then they got so bold as to say to Verizon that we want the phone records. We want to know who called whom, where they were, when they called, how long they talked of every Verizon customer. They got caught because one young man had the courage to risk his own fate for the greater good. Now, it is astonishing to me that the majority of Americans don't think that what the United States government did in violation of its own constitution was wrong. Most Americans are angry at the man who gave you this gift, who revealed that the U.S. government was ignoring its own constitution, the very constitution that those men and women had been sworn to serve. And they think that maybe he should be extradited, that he is a traitor, that he is, as the CIA claims, is a person who has put America at grave risk, and not the perpetrators, not the government officials themselves. Stunning. It's kind of like 1984 and Brave New World and Animal Farm have all come to materialize on our doorstep. And I'm not talking here about Big Brother spying everywhere. That's obvious. I'm talking with dumbing down of the population so that they go along with it as unthinking zombies. The president, of course, defended the program, which is the part that that seen both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats in Congress and the Senate, as well as leading government officials, as well as the President of the United States, all defending what they were doing, is probably the most reprehensible part of this, maybe the second most reprehensible. I would say the most reprehensible is America's yawning reaction to it, just as the functional zombies in a future world where people are becoming nothing but serfs to their lords and masters. The President of the United States said don't look at me. This program, it was authorized by Congress and all its continual oversight by Congress. Don't blame me for it. You know, the last thing I need is another crisis, another shot to my credibility. You know, after the disclosures that he's lied about everything related to the IRS scandal, that he knew and purposely orchestrated the targeting of opponents, particularly in the Tea Party, and that his awareness of this was just quite recent when there's now emails that prove otherwise, when every shred of evidence regarding Benghazi shows that the President of the United States not only lied, but he went to sleep the night that after he'd been told that the embassy was under attack, allowed four Americans to die without any support, lied about who the perpetrators were to advance his agenda. That when you have a president in these circumstances, a president who was exposed before PRISM and before the Verizon incident by the Associated Press for having gotten the same secret court to impose wiretaps and clandestine spying on reporters from the Associated Press. Oh, then, you know, waffling all over that. Now, that's even forgotten in light of the fact that now it's tens of millions of Americans, if not every American, that is being spied upon. This president said that he had some healthy skepticism. I'm not sure that he's a skeptic of anything. I think he's a zealot. But he said that after the safeguards were established, he decided it was worth it. Of course it was, from his perspective. He could spy on those that he thought did not share his agenda. He says you can't have 100% security and then also have 100% privacy and zero inconvenience. It's the antithesis of what Benjamin Franklin said. Of course, Benjamin Franklin said those who give up privacy, freedom, for security deserve neither. Obama's taking the opposite view. Oh, if you want security, you've got to give up privacy. It's not true. If you want security, read the Torah. But apart from that, if you're not looking for an actually reliable source of security, you just want your government to supply some security, tell them to go read Prophet of Doom. 99.9% of terrorist acts are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. It explains who they are, why they kill, explains what we can do to stop them. You don't need to spy on average Americans. You don't need to frisk little old ladies going through airports, five-year-old girls. No, you really don't need to do that. We don't need to invade everyone's privacy. We just need to be smart, which is something we've ceased to be. He said there'll be some trade-offs involved, and we're going to have to make some choices. No, they made their choices. They just didn't give America any choice. It used to be that America was about freedom. Now it isn't. It's about the government officials choosing and imposing. When law-abiding citizens make phone calls, who they call, when they call, and where they call is private information. Not anymore. Rebecca McKinnon wrote an editorial. She said the erosion of privacy rights under the Fourth Amendment, written to protect us against unreasonable search and seizure. You know, you can't have anything more unreasonable than PRISM and the Verizon phone records. I mean, it's completely unjustifiable. I mean, it's an absolute, total conflict with the rights provided by the Fourth Amendment. So it's an example, again, just as are all of the gun laws that are trying to be that the government is trying to impose. It's an absolute, total, and complete disagreement, discord with the U.S. Constitution. But it began in earnest under George W. Bush, who I understand now has a favorable rating. This guy that committed America to two wars based on his lies that led to a million people being died and squandering of $6 trillion of U.S. currency, who claimed to be an evangelical born-again Christian, and then when he was no longer up for election, said, that wasn't true. Yeah, favorable rating now. My, my. The Patriot Act passed overwhelmingly. When it was passed right after 9/11, I screamed. I was doing thousands of radio interviews at the time. I told America that you'd had been hoodwinked by putting a label that most Americans love, patriotism, on a bill that did exactly the opposite, that removed the freedoms and the protections that had once made America great, that it was the Anti-Patriotism Act, but nonetheless it passed overwhelmingly. It allows the FBI to obtain telecommunication, financial, and credit records without a court order. The Fourth Amendment is done asunder by the Patriot Act. Moreover, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which was passed in 2008, its amendment grants U.S. companies immunity from being sued by their customers who comply even with blatantly illegal government surveillance requests. So the government knows what it's doing is illegal. It knows that it's unconstitutional. The companies that they're forcing to turn over information to them say, you know, our customers are going to sue us. What you're doing is against the law. And the government says, hey, but we'll indemnify you. We know it's illegal. But we're the government. We can choose who can sue and who can't sue. If they sue you, we're going to write a law here that says that, no, they can't sue you for that. They don't play by their own rules. Hypocrites. You ought not be patriotic. If you are, shake your ignorance. As a presidential candidate in 2008, Barack Obama pledged to reform the Patriot Act and to rescind the FISA Amendments Act, which that was the freedom the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in 2008. He was going to oppose both of those things, but he reversed his position, of course. The Obama administration has fought bipartisan efforts in Congress to bring the change he once championed. Oh, yes, change. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Didn't. The only thing that Obama did is accelerate the decline of America. He didn't change anything. Everything he said he was going to do, he didn't do. The result is the new normal, according to this CNN editorial. Surveillance, often of questionable legality and sometimes clear illegality against Americans who have effectively no recourse against their government. Their constitutional rights have been torn asunder. And most of the time, most citizens are unaware of how egregious the invasions of their privacy actually are. Most of us are being watched most of the time. Data is being stored forever. The surveillance state is far more egregious, far more pervasive, far more intrusive than the wildest dreams of George Orwell. We're going to return to this, and I'm going to tell you a story that hopefully will shock you to your core. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. We're covering aspects of the story of both the PRISM and the confiscation of telephone records of tens of millions of Americans and the U.S. Support for such not only intrusions of privacy, but also overturning the protections that once were considered important in the U.S. Constitution. The 29-year-old computer technician who actually works for a U.S. defense contractor is the person who leaked the detail. He's worked for Booz Allen. It is interesting what the United States has done here. The whole story, and this is not the story that's going to shake you. I probably won't get to that until the next segment. It has to do with the plot that Dianne Feinstein told the nation that had been thwarted by this. It is quite a story. But one of the things that the U.S. government has done is that rather than hire people directly as government workers and therefore having to pay them huge pensions and all of the cost associated with the inefficiency of the U.S. government, they work through private contractors. The government knows that it can't do anything well. It's too bad most people don't recognize that, but it can't do anything well. So it hires private contractors to do most everything. And the private contractors are also in a position where they don't want to be, particularly those working for the government, they get a pass on the manner that they employ individuals so that they don't have to pay them severance, so they don't have to pay them health care, so they don't have to provide them any benefits, so that they can circumvent every burden that's placed on an ordinary business. And what they do is they hire people. They have consulting firms like Booz Allen actually hire people to be independent contractors for government agencies so that the government and the independent contractor don't have to abide by any of the rules and regulations imposed on ordinary businesses. What they do is they pay these typically young men and women a stunning amount of money. I mean, they grossly overpay them. My son, who is a technologist, was approached by a similar firm to upgrade the designs for the nuclear reactors in America's warships. And he was offered a job over the telephone. Telephone interview, submit a resume, similar salary to what this young man was making. You know, first job out of after graduate school, about $120,000, $130,000. But no health care, no guarantees, not an employee, considered an independent contractor to work on U.S. warships in their nuclear reactors. No background search. Here's the job offered on a Tuesday. Show up for work on Thursday. Here's the building. You can't talk to the people you're going to be working for. You can't ask them any questions. You accept it's the one-year contract. Go. Well, that's the kind of situation that Snowden was put in, this young man who released this information. 29 years old, just a couple of years older than my eldest son that was put in a similar situation on something equally as and potentially as damaging. He said that his sole motive was to inform the public as to that which is being done in their name and which is being done against them. Edward Snowden told the British Guardians. He's right. That was, there's no other motive for this. I mean, it's impossible to have any other motive. No reason to even question it. The man didn't get it, had no financial gain. He saw grotesque malfeasance being done, that the country was spying and breaching its own constitution, spying on its own people. And he still knew it. Amazing that somebody actually could say, you know, that's wrong, and then have the courage to risk his own future so that we as average citizens might know this. Snowden is a former technical assistant for the CIA. He'd been working at the National Security Agency, the U.S. Electronic Intelligence Service, for the past 4 years. The newspaper reported the NSA is this giant black box, and we're always told, oh, don't worry about them. They're only spying on foreigners. You know, this is a foreign intelligence gathering capability, totally off books. We're not going to tell you who's in charge of it. We're not going to tell you what their budget is. We're not going to tell you anything about it. Just don't worry about them because they're only listening in and analyzing foreign threats, foreign governments. Well, that turned out to be quite the lie, didn't it? So this young man was in Hawaii doing his job of computer consulting for the firm Booz Allen Hamilton. He's now in Hong Kong, knowing that the U.S. government is probably going to go after him. We'll return to what he had to say, and then to the lie coming from Ms. Feinstein. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta Snowden, who is, by any measure, a very courageous man, a man that has something that I don't think one in 100,000 Americans has these days, which is a conscience, as well as a backbone and courage, said that I'm willing to sacrifice all of what he has, he says, all of his independence, all of his freedom, because I can't, in good conscience, allow the U.S. government to destroy privacy, internet freedom, and the basic liberties for people, not only in America, but around the world, with this massive surveillance machine that they're secretly building. Boy, truth. America is building and deploying a massive surveillance machine. Absolutely ripping the heart out of the notion of freedom and privacy. And not only was the plot by the U.S. government, the scheme of the U.S. government, stealing taxpayer, citizens' money to build a machine that cripples them, that it's in essence causes America to be a prison state. When they got caught, they said what they were doing was good. Both sides of the aisle. The Guardian reported that the Verizon Business Network service that had been ordered to hand over the telephone records detailing the time, the location, and the phone numbers involved in all domestic calls was from April 25th of this year to July 19th. And keep that in mind. April 25th of this year to July 19th, because Ms. Feinstein is going to justify this, saying that it saved Americans from a terrible terrorist attack. Thursday, The Guardian and Post, The Washington Post and The Guardian, which is the large newspaper in the UK, disclosed the existence of PRISM, which was the next coin to fall, a program that allows the NSA, the National Security Administration, analysts to extract details of customer activities, including audio and video chats, photographs, email documents, and all other materials from computers at Microsoft, Google, Apple, and other Internet firms. Snowden said NSA's reach poses an existential threat to democracy. He said that he had hoped the Obama administration would end the programs once it took office in 2009, but instead, he said, President Obama advanced the very policies that I thought he would rein in. The first company to be forced to disclose information was Microsoft. That was in 2008. By 2009, you have Google and others that were being forced to turn over information. What has been learned is that these companies built portals, established very complex mechanisms to hand off the data on its users to the U.S. government. And rather than allow the U.S. government just to go into their servers and take whatever they wanted, what they created was a mechanism that took everything in the court order that the U.S. government had demanded and put it through a portal and then had servers set up on behalf of the U.S. government for the U.S. government to plow through all of your usage of the Internet, including all conversations, communications, images, whatever it is that you're doing online. Snowden said, I don't see myself as a hero because what I'm doing was actually in my self-interest. He says, I don't want to live in a world where there's no privacy and therefore no room for intellectual exploration and creativity. Boy, I would be proud if this young man was my son. And I'm proud of my sons, but this young man at 29 years old is extraordinary. The first call for Snowden's prosecution, however, came after his identity had been revealed. It was by Representative Peter King, the chairman of the House Homeland Security Subcommittee. So the chairman of the House Homeland Security Subcommittee, who was sworn to defend the U.S. Constitution and yet egregiously violated that oath, who should therefore be impeached, as should every member of Congress who is aware of these programs, for failing to honor their vow to protect and honor the U.S. Constitution. Now he wants Edward Snowden arrested and prosecuted by the U.S. government, not the congressmen and senators and administration leaders and heads of spy organizations that wantonly, knowingly, purposefully, deliberately violated the U.S. Constitution, which is the ultimate law in the land. He says that we need to go after him with an extradition proceeding at the earliest possible dates. This is an extraordinary consequence to American intelligence. You know, the problem is there is no collective American intelligence. We've lost the ability to be rational, to think, to be moral. Intelligence requires the ability to be judgmental, the ability to be moral, the ability to be discriminating, the ability to differentiate between right and wrong. We've lost it.
I think it's weird that they're trying to try him for treason. Basically, as far as I understand, treason is the helping of a country's enemies. And all he did was give the American people the information. Right. So are they saying that we're the enemy?
That's exactly right. Yep. Brilliant point, Scott. That is exactly right. He disclosed to the American people that its government, that the government of America was acting as their enemy. So, in reality, what he disclosed shows that the U.S. government, it's your congressmen, your senators, the heads of American spy agencies and this administration, the Obama administration, are the enemy of the United States, that they are secretly curtailing Americans' freedoms. You know, we talk about our great military. They're here to protect our freedoms, and yet the U.S. government itself is attacking U.S. freedoms. He disclosed that. Now, for the American government to call him a traitor, then since he is, the only way that you can view that rationally is to say that the U.S. government views Americans as the enemy, because they're the ones being spied on. When, in fact, the enemy is the U.S. government. Dianne Feinstein, now we're to the point where, when unfortunately, we will never get through all of this today. We'll resume this tomorrow. Dianne Feinstein, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who also ought to be tried for treason, helped to lead the, said that this information, and she was speaking at the time directly of the Verizon wiretaps, not wiretaps, but the Verizon collection of telephone use data, said it had led directly to the arrest and conviction in two cases. Najibullah Zazi, an Afghan, born Colorado man who pleaded guilty to conspiring to bomb targets in New York. Now, there have been dozens of these sting operations. This occurred way, way, way before, years before the Verizon authorization. And it wasn't even part of PRISM. It was a part of the countless FBI sting operations where the FBI went in to impose as Islamist fundamentalist. The FBI went in and posed as Islamist fundamentalist on Islamic chat sites and enticed young Muslim boys to do this kind of thing. This was a classic sting operation. Had nothing to do with PRISM or, of course, with the Verizon collection of data, because it happened years before. Now, this is the next one. She says, David Headley, who pleaded guilty to conducting advanced surveillance for the Pakistani jihadist who attacked hotels and other targets in Mumbai, India, in 2008, killing 164 people. David Headley was arrested in 2009. The time that he was arrested, he was an informant for the United States. We were paying him. The DEA was paying him. Lived in Chicago. David Headley was arrested at O'Hare Airport on his way to Pakistan to meet with the ISI, because he was a double agent. He was taking U.S. government money as an informant, and then working on behalf of the Pakistani ISI. David Headley was arrested because he was caught planning the attack on the Danish newspaper that published a cartoon showing that Mohammed inspired suicide bombers. Nothing to do with these programs. And the fact that he was even tracked down was all because of the use of SIM cards. You know, SIM cards are the little phone cards that you put in any mobile device. It's what enables, you know, this thing that's now being done with Verizon, started in April, go to June. It's the SIM cards that enable you to do that. And he was involved in the United States and New Jersey in collecting a wide variety of SIM cards so that he and fellow terrorists could do their thing. Again, that was years. We're talking about 5 years before, 6 years before this program began. I'm going to share a little bit about David Headley. I'm going to share a little bit about the organization that he worked for, it's what it was part of, and I'm going to share with you what happened in Mumbai. It's an amazing story, and the bottom line here is, and this is the part that should shock you, here is Dianne Feinstein thinking that Americans are so stupid that she can list David Headley as an example and give the inference that American was spared a Mumbai-similar attack where 150 people were killed by fundamentalist Muslims, that she can throw that out and say, see, it was all worth it. Look what I spared you from. When in fact, this man was an informant for the U.S. government at the time. We were paying him. His parents worked in the Pakistani embassy in the United States. He was an employee of Voice of America, a government agency at the time. And he disclosed, while being interrogated, so that he didn't have to go to trial, all the details associated with the Mumbai attacks association, direct association with Pakistani's ISI, which is their secret service, demonstrating conclusively that Pakistani's ISI was directly involved with the Mumbai attacks that killed 164 people in 2008 in India. And guess who the largest international sponsor is of the Pakistani ISI worldwide? Ms. Feinstein's government, the U.S. Senate, will return to Shattering Myths in a moment. It is, if it doesn't bother you, that Dianne Feinstein, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, said that Americans were spared an attack similar to that perpetrated in Mumbai by its using of this information that's being now confiscated and on the privacy of Americans relative to their cell phones via Verizon to get David Headley to plead guilty. And when it's absolutely untrue, and when David Headley actually worked for the U.S. government at the time, and when David Headley told the U.S. government and therefore the Senate Intelligence Committee that the Mumbai attacks were planned, funded, and orchestrated by the Pakistani government's ISI, their intelligence, internal intelligence agency. And yet, Dianne Feinstein, who is in the Senate and therefore responsible for the amount of money that America gives to other countries, routinely approves giving many billions of dollars a year to Pakistan, which is used to fund the ISI, which is the very terrorist organization that funded, coordinated the attacks on India. And if that doesn't shake you to your core, that she is knowingly and abetting terror internationally through funding Pakistan's ISI, when she knows that David Headley is the person who spilled the beans on the ISI, and that at the time he worked for the U.S. government, and yet she's saying, oh, but by taking Americans' privacy, look what we did. We stopped this man. But, of course, stopping him had nothing to do with Mumbai. He had nothing to do with spying on behalf of the Mumbai terrorists because they're all dead. To make such a statement, she has to assume or believe that Americans are comatose, that no one will bother to check. Well, Lashkar-e-Taiba is the organization that perpetrated the Mumbai attacks. It is a religious and political organization in Pakistan that was created by the Pakistani government, their ISI, and their military, specifically to terrorize Indians in the Kashmir region. That was its specific purpose, funded, controlled by, orchestrated by, started by the Pakistani government's ISI, Lashkar-e-Taiba. Are the group that perpetrated the attack. Now, this Mr. Headley could not be helping those who actually perpetrated the attack, the jihadists, because All but one was killed in the rescue of hostages. The only one who survived the rescue of hostages of the 10 attackers was Jamal Kassab, and he was executed in prison in November 21st of last year. So Mr. Headley, obviously, was not spying on behalf of or plotting or scheming on behalf of the Mumbai terrorists. They're all dead. Here's the story of the Mumbai terrorist attacks. It's and then we're going to get to Mr. Headley, probably tomorrow's show with Mr. Headley. 2008 Mumbai attacks were 12 coordinated shooting and bombing attacks across Mumbai, India, which is India's largest city. It used to be called Bombay, by members of Lashkar-e-Taiba, the Pakistani-based. It's not just Pakistani-based. It's ISI-controlled. Islamist, it says, militant organization. They're an fundamentalist Islamic jihadist group. The attackers allegedly received reconnaissance assistance before the attacks. You know what their primary source of reconnaissance was? Google Maps. You know, the internet-based Google Maps. Jamal Kassab, the only attacker who was captured alive, later confessed upon interrogation that the attacks were conducted with support of Pakistan's ISI. That was also confirmed by David Headley. The attacks, which drew widespread global condemnation, began on the 26th of November and last through the 29th of November in 2008, killing 166 people and wounding at least 308. Now, what's interesting here, too, is that you have the two surviving operatives in this attack, David Headley and Ajmal Kassab, and they both provide detailed evidence that Pakistan's Secret Service, their ISI, was responsible for the attacks, and America doesn't disclose that information and continues to fund Pakistan.